want to welcome everybody to this week's episode of In the Rough with JB and Golfer Gal. I'm your host, JB, and alongside Golfer Gal, we have a great show for you this week. We are talking all about improving your game, and I think we have a great guest for you, and I really want to talk about lessons.
Yeah, we have a teaching professional extraordinaire on the show with us today named Jeff Ritter, and we'll get to that a little bit later, but kind of what brought this about was I've been taking some lessons recently because I've only been in the game about 2 years now, so I consider myself still pretty new. And when I first started out, I took lessons. I had a series of five, and I learned the proper technical ways to do the swing, and so my swing for the most part is technically sound. My problem was that the instructor was so technical that he confused me all the time. So, you know, I stopped taking lessons, kind of just went out there, did my own thing. And of course, what did I do? I got bad swing habits. So I decided to go ahead and get some lessons again. And I found a lady who is awesome. She talks to me in a way where she'll re-explain things three times until she sees the light bulb go on in my head. And for that, I just absolutely love her. And I think that it's really important for people to get lessons.
You know, we had a topic in the forum a couple weeks back where there was a thread out there that said, have you taken lessons? Why or why not? And a lot of people started out with lessons. A lot of people find them along the way. And then there were some that were just against them for whatever reason, whether they went to a coach once and didn't like his style or they're self-taught. I'm of the opposite spectrum of you, Golfer Gal. I actually was self-taught other than, you know, a coach back in the day. That kind of fine-tuned things, but I was self-taught for a number of years, and I found myself to be a pretty good golfer. I was down to about a 10 or a 12 handicap at the time, and I just kind of hit a wall, and I wasn't getting better. I wasn't putting in practice time because I felt as though even when I did, I was just out there pounding balls on the range. And I found a coach that really, you know, I just sat and talked to two or three guys I called up and found somebody that really kind of changed me. And fortunately, you know, he's a part of THP as well, but it changed my game. I mean, within a year of finding him, I was from a 12 down to, you know, right around a 5 handicap, and it took me to another level. And the person we have on the show today is obviously a little more famous than that, but finding a coach has changed my game. We hope everybody does it because I think they'll find the game a lot more enjoyable. Yeah. But in the end, it really is just about having fun.
Well, and the thing is to not give up, because sometimes you might find somebody and you test them out for one or two lessons and you just don't like the way that they teach, you don't like their style. Don't give up. There's going to be somebody out there who is going to be able to communicate with you and relate to you in a way that you'll understand and you'll be able to better your game. And that happened to me. I found somebody who taught me the techniques and the technical part of it, which was great, but I needed somebody who had more of a feel, sort of a teaching mentality, to be able to really get me to where I need to be.
In a second, we will have Jeff Ritter joining us, and for those that don't know him, check out his site when you get a chance. You're going to be glad you did. It's www.jeffrittergolf.com. Jeff is a man of many talents, but most know him as one of the top golf teachers in the land. He's also an author, a well-dressed golfer, thanks to Sligo, and an all-around nice guy. Let's give a warm welcome to Jeff.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. This is great.
Thanks for joining us. Before we get started, we want to mention that you have a new book out called Your Kid Ate a Divot, and it's not your typical golf book by a golf teacher. What made you write it and choose this style?
Well, I've always enjoyed writing, but the book sort of happened by accident. You know, when you teach golf as long as I have, there are things that happen from time to time which are usually humorous in terms of how someone approaches the game and what they do to try and get better. And when you go out with your friends, you often tell stories about the things that you do. So I had a couple of stories that were involving ludicrous things that happened on the lesson tee, and these stories kept on being requested more and more each time I got out with my friends. And one day one of my friends said, you know, you have to do something with these stories. So I thought to myself, well, if I could come up with the antidote to the affliction that these folks are coming in with, then I could have a funny story coupled with a good tangible tip that could really help some people. And I got hooked up with Golf Punk magazine, which is in the UK, about 3 or 4 years ago. And they gave me a form to actually write these stories in a monthly column that was based on things that happened on the lesson tee. And it was one of these things where I only had 3 stories, but all of a sudden I had the need to create more every month. And I don't know if I put the intention out there, the universe just sort of decided to work in my favor, but more and more people started coming out with more interesting, you know, life challenges and whatnot that were really more visible through the lessons that we can learn within the game. And although the first story started out as humorous, a lot of them became a lot more inspirational, a lot more heartfelt and touching. And as we sort of finished up about 2 years worth of columns. I was approached by a publisher and we were able to actually expand the stories and turn them into the book known as Your Kid Ate a Divot, 18 Life Lessons from Links. And within the stories, there is a true story about a kid who actually ate a divot. So you'll have to read on to find out how that one turned out. But there's certainly a life lesson involved there as well.
And it's definitely a great book, and I want to touch on it again a little bit, but I wanted to ask some questions first. And I just want to start by saying, you know, it's a rare case when we get a chance to have a golf teacher on to help our listeners. So we asked them to submit questions via email or on the forum, and then we wanted to go ahead and we select the most popular ones to ask you on air. So no pressure there, right?
That sounds great. That's what I do.
Well, let's start with the questions. What's the most common swing wrecking flaw that you see from your students?
The most common one by far is the fact that golfers tend to swing on too steep of a swing plane, which basically means that, you know, your golf club sits on about a 45-degree angle to the ground. Now, of course, each club is a little bit different, but just from a general standpoint, that's the angle it sits on. And that's the angle that the swing is designed to be built on. And what most people do is they really don't understand the conditions under which the game is played. They see a straight target line, and they assume that if I swing straight, the ball will go straight. And the reality is a straight swing will hit a curve shot, whereas a curve swing will hit a straight shot. So most people swing too straight up and down due to a misconception of how to play the game. And as a result, all these problems such as taking big divots, hitting off the toe of the club, slicing to the right, which most golfers are afflicted with, that's where it comes from, swinging too vertical.
So now I have all these other swing thoughts in my head. I got to think about how curved goes straight and straight goes curve. Okay, makes sense. It makes sense with the world of golf, no question. What is the best way to fix the over-the-top swing, and are there certain drills that you recommend? This, would, by the way, was our most common question.
Well, that's a good question to have, because it really revolves around the first question, which is, you know, what's the biggest flaw people have, which is swinging steep. When you're swinging steep, you are really swinging, in some cases, what is known over the top or over the top of the ideal swing plane, which is vertical. The best way for someone to fix that is, number one, to recognize how their posture is going to influence the shape of their swing. Every golf swing is made up of a combination of what I call steepening or shallowing influences. A steepening influence would make the club swing into the ground more, whereas a shallowing influence would make the club swing into the ground less. So when someone sets up with their posture very tall with their chest, standing very vertical, what they're doing is they're setting up a very level or rounded shoulder pitch, a shoulder tilt, which won't hit much ground. Well, what often happens is that the hands and the arms have to create a steepening influence to match that shallowing influence. And when we're swinging too steep, the hands and the arms are usually traveling very vertical. So if someone wants to flatten their golf swing and have less of a steep angle of attack, the first thing they should do is actually bend over more, which will steepen their spine angle, which will actually force their arms to swing flatter versus steeper.
That's a huge tip for me, because I'm one of those people who suffers from swinging over the top. If you could make a recommendation to a pro in order to fix or improve their swing, who would it be and why? And what would you tell them?
Oh, which pro on tour would I try and fix?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, that's really hard to say, because the thing is that when you're looking from an outsider's perspective, it's hard to figure out, you know, where they've been, what they're working on, what their tendencies are. The things that you hear from commentators on television as it relates to what a player is actually doing out there are usually very different, and commentating is really all about entertainment. So you're probably not going to like the answer that I'm going to give you, but I would never stick my nose into another tour pro's business unless he approached me first and we had a good chance to sit down for an hour or so and talk about, you know, where they are now, where they've been, the things they'd like to try and accomplish.
You get one pass, so we'll let you off with that one. Weight shift is a big problem that I've always had a little bit. It's not really been affecting me too much in my game, but I know a lot of others have it. They, you know, they finish their swing and they fall backwards. Why is that, and how can somebody stop it?
Well, the good news is that this is going to revolve around questions one and questions two again. And when someone's falling back, what they're doing is they're trying to shallow out the bottom of their off swing. So imagine if you were in an airplane that was going to crash into the ground.
You'd be that sounds
down
fun.
On what we call, well, just imagine it. You don't actually have to experience it. But imagine that you were coming down on a steep angle of descent, an angle of descent that's going to hit too much down. what that pilot is going to try and do is he's going to try and pull back and find a way to shallow the angle of attack so he creates a safe landing. So anytime a golfer is actually falling back to their back foot, they have too steep of an angle of descent, and their way of falling back is just their way of trying to create a safe landing and actually create a shallow divot. So a lot of the problems we see with the golfer's footwork are related more to the shape of the swing and actually not to footwork at all. The footwork is an effect of the problem and not the cause. So if you're able to get a little flatter golf swing, that will help. One of the best things you can do, this is another way to stop coming over the top, is actually practice something simple as like a baseball swing. If a golfer will hold the golf club up in the air about waist high and imagine swinging in a rounded manner as if they were hitting a pitch, if they start to gradually lean forward, that rounded swing will start to hit the ground. And if the golf club is coming from an angle which is not going to strike the ground with too much of a steep angle, they'll actually start to notice that their weight will naturally shift to the front foot, and that problem of falling back will be cured.
That's a great way of explaining it. I think a lot of people will relate to it that way, too. I want to switch gears for a second and go more towards fashion. What would your Sunday outfit be?
My Sunday outfit, well, I'm very fortunate to have a great relationship with a company called Flygo out of Canada. And they've they've got a very progressive, fun vibe. Brian Gay on the PGA Tour, who's won a couple times last year, is probably the most famous player who's currently wearing their brand. But anytime...
Wait, I thought that was me.
I'm sure you have some of the gear, but I think Brian Gay is probably a little more visible. But anytime I can, I like to bust out my white pants, and I like to create some contrast with a nice maybe lime green shirt, the white belt, and of course all white shoes. So, the great thing about the tour these days is that the guys are trying to express themselves a little bit more. And the stuff that they wear, it's not just about, athletic function. A lot of people think that, a golf shirt is just something to wear to get around and have some good breathability. But, the guys are becoming more athletic. The cuts are becoming more athletic to fit their body types. And, of course, they want to try and create some visual draw. So if you look at your favorite player out there in the fairway from 200 yards away, you can usually tell by the pants he has on, the shirt that he's wearing, and maybe the visor that he's got on top of his head, who he is, and I think it just adds a lot more to what the game has to offer.
Well, she'll always try to take you to style, but we have more questions about actual golf.
Perfect.
How much of an amateur's practice time should be dedicated to the short game, putting, chipping, pitching?
Well, I would, first of all, have them look at their time constraints. And, everyone's time constraints are different. Some guys are really dedicated, and they have the ability to get out, 5 days a week, and some people only have the ability to get out, one or two evenings. So, based on the amount of time that you have, I would say however much time you spend on your full swing, I would take that time and double it and add it to the practice of mastering the art of the putting in short game.
Yeah, it's one of those things that people don't seem to practice it as much, but I know from a female perspective, that's probably the most important thing for us to be practicing, because that's how we're going to be able to compete with the men. Because if we can work the green, then I think that we'll be able to be, neck and neck with everybody else.
Well, the other thing that I really like is I like for golfers to try and establish what their identity is. A lot of times in life, and this is one of the things actually in the book, a lot of times in life we're taught that, the more diversified we are, the more successful we're going to be. So we're taught to go to workshops and seminars and learn how to speak Spanish and learn how to work an Excel spreadsheet. And if we do all these different things, then somehow that's going to add up to being more successful in life. And a lot of times when we try and be a master of everything, we actually dilute the thing that maybe we're most gifted at. And if you look at someone like Phil Mickelson, he's a great player, but his identity is someone who's amazing with the sand wedge in his wedge game. And even though that he hits the ball sideways from time to time, and maybe sometimes doesn't make the best decisions from a course management perspective, the wedge game is always there to save him. And that's the thing he's always hung his hat on. That's what people know him by. So I think for a golfer to go out there, they need to look at what area of the game do they love the most, what area of the game inspires them the most, and whether it's tee shots, hitting them far, or being a great bunker player, someone who's really good at putting. If you spend as much time as possible honing that craft, the thing that you're best at, I think, number one, you're going to enjoy the game more, you're going to enjoy practicing more, and you'll also be known as someone who's great in that task. And that's one thing that's great, to be able to go out and play with some people, and at the end of it say, Morgan, your chipping is amazing. You're the best chipper I've ever seen. And if they say things like that, I think you'd be more inspired to play and work on those other areas as well.
I think that's an awesome tip, and I hope that everybody is listening to that and taking that to heart. Last question, not the last question, sorry. Who on tour has the best swing, in your opinion, and why?
Who on tour has the best swing, in my opinion, and why?
Besides Freddie Couples, because everyone says besides, that.
Everyone says Freddie Couples?
Everyone says Freddie Couples.
I'll tell you, I do like Freddie Couples' swing, and I like Freddie Couples' swing because it just looks so natural and mindless. I'm going to give you some other answers. I'm not just going to jump on the Freddie Couples bandwagon. But
okay.
I'll answer in two ways. From a technical perspective, I love the swings of Trevor Immelman and Hunter Mahan. I teach a philosophy that some people call a one-plane swing. It's basically based on the idea that your arms and your shoulders are going to swing in a similar plane throughout, which is almost like playing baseball off the ground. If you're playing baseball up in the air, the arms and shoulders swing in a similar arc, and that's really beneficial in terms of generating a decent amount of power and not really relying on things like rhythm and timing in order to develop a good strike. So when I look at swings like Hunter Mahan and Trevor Immelman, I see a lot of the similar characteristics of the things I try and do with my players. On the flip side, there's a lot of swings out there that might not be mechanically superior in the way that they look, but for some reason they're also aesthetically pleasing. And when I look at a swing like Jim Furyk or Freddie Couples, the thing that I like is that they look relaxed. You can see that their golf swing has a sense of uniqueness and creativity. And when you look at coaching these days, I think a lot of times people might look at the way that I coach and think that I have a cookie-cutter philosophy, which is entirely to the contrary. I like to swing the club a certain way. I look for certain things. But I also like to really capitalize on a player's unique abilities. And one of those unique things about a player is being able to see their personality and what they do. So when someone comes to me, it's all about talking about who they are, who they want to be, what their goals are. But I find uniqueness and attractiveness in swings like Jim Furyk, just like I do in swings that are a lot more modernly sound, like a Hunter Mahan or Trevor Immelman as well.
What myths of golf would you like to see kind of abolished, like, you know, keep your head down, et cetera? You know, you hear the old things, you see the old men walking up and down the range giving quote-unquote lessons. What are those myths that you'd like to see gone?
The biggest one that would really help golfers the most is to get rid of the idea of swinging down the target line. You hear that time in and time out, especially on television. They'll actually zoom in on the club head and we'll say, look how long he keeps that club face square to the target. Look how long he keeps that club head moving down the target line. And what people have to realize is that in life we're really faced with two different kinds of games. We have online games and offline games. If we're playing an online game, then we're imagining something like shooting a basketball. And it's an online game because you're standing or straddling your line of flight. And the best way to make a free throw is to actually move your arm in a linear fashion up that line, straight in line with the target. An offline game is a game like golf, baseball, some tennis strokes, sidearm throwing, where we're not standing on the line, we're actually standing off the line. So in order for us to be as accurate as possible, our club head in golf should only touch the line, number one, when we're setting up, and then number two, for a very small fraction at the moment of contact. So the way that I believe the golf should be played is played on an arc. Circles don't have straight lines in them. The best ball strikers play on line the least, not the most. So if we can play in a circle and get the swing down the line mentality out of our vocabulary, we're going to play this game a heck of a lot better.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, me too. Well, I want to go back to your book a little bit. I read it. I absolutely loved it. I love the stories. I love the tips. I found it extremely motivating. In fact, one of the reasons that I picked it up was because I had an awful day at the range and I decided I was going to quit golf and never ever golf again. And
that's a weekly occurrence for the listeners out there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I picked up the book and I started reading the stories and reading the tips in there, and it motivated me to go back out the next day. And I've been, you know, I read the book for 2 days straight, and it kept motivating me to go back out there and to keep playing. And I think it's a great book. I think that people should pick it up. And can you tell us a little bit more about it and where everybody can pick it up?
Well, it's one of these books where, you know, first of all, the cover is pretty humorous. You know,
it's hilarious.
And vivid. And right on the cover is actually a 10-year-old boy that we actually hired through a casting agency, and we brought him in, and he spent a whole afternoon actually eating dirt, eating divots, carving them up with a knife and a fork, and he had a little fine dining arrangement, and we had a makeup artist put dirt all over his face, and he was just perfect for the part. His name was Spencer, and we're so lucky to have found him. And the thing is that when you look at a book like that, it looks kind of zany. It looks goofy. The stories themselves are all funny and humorous in some way, so it's a very light read. But the thing that I'm most proud of is that I think that the tips and the life lessons are a lot more poignant and surprising than most people would think. So I think it's a unique combination of cover, of humor, and some content that hopefully when someone's done reading it, they say, you know what, I learned at least one thing in here that I never considered before, and hopefully it's going to help my golf, and it might actually help my life as well.
Yeah, I recommend for people who go out there and have a day like I did, a round like I did, or a range session like I did, and you're just frustrated and you just think you're never going to pick up a club again, I recommend that you read the book. And where can people find it?
Well, the thing is that I just want to add one more thing to that. If you think about golf, you know, people always talk about golf as this ultimate metaphor for life. And if you think about it, you know, golf is really 5 hours of having a goal in mind and then 5 hours of deciding how we're going to respond when we don't get what we want. And life is a lot like that. Every day we set up with a goal of how our day is going to be. And a lot of times it doesn't pan out the way that we expect. And it's really the person that has the right attitude towards the things that come their way that really ends up on top, happy and fulfilled. And it was really funny that I wish I would have had this story in the book when I was writing it. But I was giving a lesson to a woman a few weeks ago, and she was just mentioning to me that based on my life lessons, but she said, you know what, every first date I have on a golf course. And I said, well, why is that? And she goes, honey, I'm divorced. She goes, I don't have 6 months to find out what a guy's going to be like. I can tell on 9 holes based on how he responds to what his golf ball does. And it was really funny to hear her say that, but it's just another example of how, you know, what we do in play and what we do throughout our day really is a mirror. And the game is really there for us as a vehicle to learn a lot about ourselves and the people around us, and that's why I'm excited to be involved with a project like this. But it's available on Amazon.com. It's also available on my website, JeffRitterBooks.com. There's a link from my normal website, if people forget that, at JeffRitterGolf.com. But it's available, and it's out there, and we're excited to see it take off, and hopefully it'll be one of those books that people really enjoy and give us a great response in return.
Well, we have enjoyed it, both of us, and we want to thank you for joining us this week, and we'll be sure to have you on throughout 2010.
That sounds great. Thanks so much for having me, guys. It was great meeting you both at the PGA show in Orlando as well, and best of luck with the magazine. I've been keeping posted on the things you're doing on Facebook and Twitter, and it's fantastic what you're doing, and you're providing a valuable resource that I haven't seen out there at the level that you're doing, and you guys should be excited about it.
Thank you so much.
I got to tell you, Golfer Gal, that was a lot of fun for me. Having somebody like Jeff Ritter on the show, a teacher of his caliber, and just an all-around nice guy, changes everything when I'm looking at my game of golf.
Yeah, he has such a wealth of knowledge. It's absolutely amazing, and it was such a pleasure to have him on, and I look forward to him coming on again in the future. And speaking of future, our next show, we are actually going to be heading over to Doral, and we'll be covering some of the event over there, so we'll be bringing you lots of good information.
That is right. We will be down in Miami, enjoying the sun, although we're in the sun now.
But it's been cold.
That's true. But so we will be down at Doral. We should have some player interviews for everybody, as well as, you know, talking to you from that area. And, you know, this is THP, and we've gone an episode or so without a contest, and that's just not good. So despite the fact that we don't have a contest here for you on this show, we are going to have you listen to Tour Talk with Jake and Dano, their next show coming up this week. It's either on Monday or Tuesday. They are going to have a Doral contest, and you know, you guys will have a lot of fun picking winners and deciding who wins. And if they perform well, maybe you'll win a prize. So definitely tune into that one. And for myself and Golfer Gal, we are going to sign off. Unlike us playing from the rough, we hope you are keeping it in the short grass.